to introduce the man who will deliver our sermon this morning, Dr. William Fowler. Many of you know Bill. You've heard him speak through the years. He represents not only the Massachusetts Historical Society that does so much for our community, but also is Distinguished Professor of American History at Northeastern University. I have just completed reading your new book, Empires at War, and it's a wonderful book. And we are delighted that he is here as part of the ongoing 375th celebration, Dr. William Fowler.
Thank you, Stephen. Good morning, everyone. It is a great honor to be with you this morning, to be in this venerable institution, and I thank you for that invitation. We gather today to remember an event of nearly 400 years ago and to remember an event of only 4 years ago. We in this Commonwealth are extraordinarily fortunate to be the inheritors of a tradition of liberty and freedom. Liberty and freedom that was bought and paid for by those generations who have come before us, by those men and women whose courage and sacrifice created the world in which we now live. Nowhere is that legacy of freedom and liberty more evident than in the three charters that form the foundation of our Commonwealth: a Pilgrim Charter, a Puritan Charter, and a Revolutionary Charter. Not far from where we are this morning, atop Beacon Hill, secreted away in a vault of the State Library, is a small manuscript. A manuscript, a memoir, a diary, kept by William Bradford, governor of Plymouth Plantation. It is in that document that William Bradford wrote down carefully the first charter of our Commonwealth. It begins, "In the name of God, Amen. We, whose names are underwritten, the loyal subjects of our dread sovereign Lord King James, by the grace of God, King of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King, Defender of the Faith, etc. Having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of our Christian faith and honor of our King and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these presents solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and one of another, covenant and combine ourselves together into a civil body politic, for our better ordering and preservation and furtherance of the ends aforesaid, and by virtue hereof to enact, constitute, and frame such just and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutions, and offices from time to time as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony, unto which we promise all due submission and obedience, in witness whereof we have subscribed our names at Cape Cod, the 11th of November, in the year of the reign of our sovereign King James of England, France, and Ireland, the 18th, and of Scotland, the 54th, Anno Domini, 1620. This, of course, the Mayflower Compact. In the days since the Mayflower Compact, there's been an enormous amount of rhetoric written about that document, most of it inaccurate. But there in the site of Plymouth, there within the separatist saints gave their names to this document. They wrote this document because they were beyond the bounds of government as they knew it. They were surrounded by strangers, as they called them, men and women who are not pilgrims, not separatists. But nonetheless, they would form their own government in this new world. But while the cabin of the Mayflower may have been a pretty stuffy place to nurture American constitutional liberty, it nevertheless was there in that cabin that the seed was planted that would blossom into American liberty. The core of that compact brought to America the spirit of the common law. A notice that law was not immutable. A notice that law could change by the people to be governed by it. It could be changed there in the cabin of the Mayflower. It could be changed to meet new needs in this new world. The Mayflower Compact is a cornerstone of American government, not because it fully defines the principles of American constitutionalism, but because it was there expressed on November the 11th, 1620. There expressed the people's right to adapt the laws to fit their needs. Law could evolve. Bequeathed to us there these two cardinal principles, then: the principle of a democratic church and the principle of a democratic state. Now, tucked away on the other side of our town, on the south side, in a large, somewhat unattractive building, perhaps very unattractive building, facing the harsh Atlantic, there in our state archives is the second charter of our Commonwealth. Nearly a decade after the Mayflower Compact, on March the 4th, 1629, King Charles gave his signature to a charter for the Company of Massachusetts Bay. It begins, "Charles, by grace of God, King of England, Scotland, France, and Ireland, defender of the faith, etc." And then goes on in excruciating detail to give to the Massachusetts Bay Company all land between 40 degrees and 48 degrees north latitude. That's just about everything between New York and Maine. Sea to sea. Oregon and Washington are ours. And that these lands were to be held with all the feudal entanglements and rituals that one can possibly imagine. Indeed, the Charter of the Massachusetts Bay is 8,000 words long. The Mayflower Compact is 200. It's not a democratic document. It was given by the king and endured at the king's sufferance. But despite the very best efforts of the king and his successors to imprison and to restrict this charter and to imprison and restrict the spirit of the people of this commonwealth, it never worked, because they too were imbued with the spirit of the common law, that the law could change and that we could change it and that it needed to be adapted to the needs of a new community. Furthermore, unlike all other charters that were granted in the 17th century, this charter did not stay in London. They tucked it away and brought it here. That's why it's in our state archives. If the king couldn't get at the charter, perhaps the king couldn't control us, since we had the document. And that charter was granted not to a civil community, but to a trading company, the Massachusetts Bay Company. But they altered the meaning of that charter. They took its spirit and made it into the governing document for a civil society. Indeed, that chartered company began to do what chartered companies ought never to do. They began to charter other places. They called them towns. Towns. As Boston became a crowded place, people hived out to establish new congregations and new settlements. And the governing body of this chartered company, the General Court, chartered these towns and created new, completely new political entities. Entities that became very prideful, very proud of their locality and their rights. Indeed, in 1635, the General Court recognized what in fact had happened with the establishment of these towns. On March 3rd, 1635, the General Court enacted a law. Whereas particular towns have many things which concern themselves and the ordering of their own affairs, it is ordered that the freemen of every town shall have power to make such orders as may concern the well-ordering of their own towns. Every freeman of every town may make laws, ordinances for their own well-being. The independence of the towns here in Massachusetts is infamous. In 1636, the people of Sudbury were having some local dispute. And so the General Court, in its wisdom, dispatched a committee of the General Court to Sudbury to help the people of Sudbury. They were met at the border of the town by a committee of the Sudbury selectmen, who informed the representatives from the General Court that, quote, "We shall be judged by men of our own choosing. Go back to Boston." Evolution, laws changing, and changing in the direction of an expansion of rights and liberty and freedom. This expansion of rights and liberty and freedom went unrecognized in England. In England, they lived in a time warp. 1630, nothing could have changed. The charter was the charter. Nothing could change. Here in Massachusetts, everything had changed as we learned to govern ourselves through our towns and through our general court and through our courts. We will govern ourselves. For 150 years, we governed ourselves. Think about that. By the eve of the American Revolution, this community was as old as Denver, Colorado is today. This was not a frontier community. This was a sophisticated, urbane community. The English failed to recognize that. The people of Massachusetts were much accustomed to governing themselves. That self-governance was challenged, of course, in the era of the American Revolution, when King and Parliament enacted laws inimical to our rights and to our privileges. They set the stage for revolution. Our revolution that began here in Boston did not seek to overthrow traditions. We sought to restore them. We were not interested in new ways of governing ourselves. We knew how to govern ourselves. We fought a revolution here to preserve what was ours, our right to self-government. We fought to preserve the Mayflower Compact. We fought to preserve the Charter as we knew it. That revolution, though, did indeed destroy an established government. Here in Massachusetts, in the midst of that violent revolution, by which we overthrew the power of the king, there was never a moment of anarchy. Never a moment of anarchy. For we knew how to govern ourselves. But now we needed a new charter, a new document that would build on the Mayflower Compact, build on our previous charter, and establish our rights for all to see in this new republic, in this revolutionary world. And so we went to the people in 1779. We went to the people, and the people were asked to elect representatives to a convention to write a new charter. And that convention met. And that convention did a very, very wise thing. That convention turned to one man whose knowledge of the history of Massachusetts was unparalleled, whose command of the common law was unequaled, the man who was the best ever lawyer in our nation. They turned to John Adams. And in the space of a very few weeks, Mr. Adams wrote a constitution for the Commonwealth, his word, for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That document remains today the constitution under which we are governed. It is the oldest written constitution in use in the world. It serves us very well. It came about in an extraordinary time in the history of our nation, an explosion of constitution making. No time in history before or since has there been such an intense period of political thought and discussion. Think for a moment, in a period of 12 years, every state wrote at least one constitution, some several. We framed a federal constitution, and these documents have preserved our liberties now for more than 200 years. An extraordinary moment in the history of the world. Our Constitution of 1780 does not begin, "In the name of God, amen." Nor does it acknowledge a distant king. Our Constitution, the Constitution of our Commonwealth, begins, "The end of the institution, maintenance, and administration of government is to secure the existence of the body politic, to protect it, and to furnish the individuals who compose it with the power of enjoying in safety and tranquility their natural rights and the blessings of life. And whenever these great objects are not obtained, the people have a right to alter the government and to take measures necessary for their safety, prosperity, and happiness." John Adams had returned to the cabin of the Mayflower. "That we shall make such ordinances meet and necessary." It is the spirit of the common law, the Mayflower Compact, the charter, that prevails in our Constitution today. This Constitution is, in the words of John Adams, "a solemn compact by which the whole people covenants with each citizen and each citizen with the whole people." This is the charter that has survived. This is the Constitution of our Commonwealth today. One that began there in 1620, gained life and vitality through the spirit and energy and determination of the people of Massachusetts. These three charters are the charters that guided us towards independence. But many nations have become independent. Most importantly, these are the charters that have secured our liberty. And we ought to take this moment to recommit ourselves, not simply to continue to secure that liberty, but to do all that we can within our Commonwealth to covenant with one another and to extend that liberty to others. Thank you very much.